I'm okay. I'm hating Skype. I don't hate Microsoft. I just hate Skype. No. Well, you know, I actually, with most interviews or with all interviews, I tried to get on early. I tried to get on 10 minutes early and I was still 5 minutes late because Skype is horrible. But I did email you and say, I'm battling with Skype. I will write you when I've defeated Skype. You know that I invented software called FiendPhone. It's much better than Skype, right?
I do. It drops on my computer because I have to hijack my 4G to get an internet connection. And for some reason, Skype 4G. Will run it.
Yeah. Oh, we always use FiendPhone Wired. It's a persnickety program. Like, Skype's better for for idiots. Not saying you're an idiot. Just like Skype works anywhere, you know? Like, Skype will work if you're in a machine shop using your laptop's microphone. But FiendPhone, you have to use headphones, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you do all that stuff, you can get much better sound than you could ever get from Skype. So,
I actually do record in an 18-wheeler, so I have to
steal
the signal off my phone, wire it into the laptop, and do this gorilla shit.
Where are you at? Where are you located? I guess you're a trucker.
Yeah. I live around Knoxville, Tennessee. Right now, I've made it to Jackson, kind of halfway between Memphis and Nashville, heading up to Harrisburg, PA.
Oh, so you're in your truck right now?
Yeah, I record every episode.
Somebody else used to do that. Who was it? Mav Fiend used to have something called something with it was a gun show, and one of the three guys was a trucker and did it from the road. And then there was kind of a popular, I don't know if it's still around, but it was called, like, you know, the Doubtful Trucker or something, the something trucker. You ever heard that? Like, it wasn't a liberty thing, but I mean, it was kind of probably a constitutionalist thing, but it wasn't really politics. It was just a trucker.
Yeah, a lot of those guys sitting at the diner, man, I can't stand it.
Yeah. Do you have XM radio?
No, I do podcasts and anything that's free on Mises.org, shit like that.
Yeah, a lot of truckers do XM radio because it's like solid no matter what the weather, and it's this, you can listen across the country and it doesn't drop out.
Oh, yeah.
But it costs money, yeah.
Yeah, it does. I'm a cheap ass.
Do you have are you married? Do you have kids?
We got two kids, and we have actually set a date for April 1st.
Nice.
To kind of fuck with all my friends on the internet. Like, hey, we're married. They might say, no, you're not.
That's funny.
Yeah, we're actually going to go down to, you know, Merrick Van Landingham?
Sure do. I like him.
Yeah, I do too. We're actually going to go down to Gulf Shores for the honeymoon / family vacation thing and drop in and see him for a day or so.
Cool. I like him.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Give him a hug and tell him I said no homo.
Yeah, I'll lick his ear and tell him it's from you.
That's cool. You kids and your closet heterosexuality.
Your tendencies.
Yeah. What was I going to say?
Do
you have a job set up for when you're replaced by robots as a trucker?
Dude, it's coming. And
I know.
Like everybody else, I'm going to make millions in podcasting, I guess.
I hope you're going to make millions in altcoins.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm recording this part. This part's all going on my Patreon.
Oh, right on.
I started
right
recording on. As soon as we called. So.
Well, let me, the levels sound good. I probably don't have to stop. And
let me look at the levels. So I'm talking. Now you talk.
Yo.
Yeah. How come my Virginia accent comes out when I'm talking to you? I only lived there for 3 years. That's weird.
Because I've got a Tennessee accent.
I know.
It pulls it out of people.
Yeah. Yep.
You should hear Merrick whenever I've had him on twice, and you can tell about halfway through it starts progressing.
Yeah. At least I admit it. I guess it's some like twisted form of what's that mind control thing that Stefan Molyneux does and Trump do where you like emulate the other person subtly? I don't know. There's a name for it. Yeah, that thing.
Pandering.
Chameleon, two-faced. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that.
That's me. All right, so let's do this thing. You ready? I don't know. I don't check. Yeah. Oh, let me hear your levels again.
Yeah, I'm kind of going to just kind of like natural conversation. I won't actually like that picture I sent you. I'm not actually going to hit topics in a row, but
yeah,
just kind of use that as a rough guide, I guess.
You never interviewed me. People ask me one question and I talk for 2 hours, and then they try to ask another question. They realize that I already answered that question in the first hour.
Well, Merrick holds the record, so.
For what?
My longest show. I can't get that guy to shut up.
For being off topic. I'll talk.
Just talking.
Till my voice dies, probably, which, because I've been talking a lot lately, doing a lot of interviews and doing shows and mainly talking with this dude, Phil Warmoth, who I went to college with, who we we reconnect. Like, we were best friends in college. Like, we were the two misfits that didn't have a lot of other friends because we were too weird in a really normal time. I mean, we're talking early 80s in upstate New York, western New York, small town. The Rust Belt in the Cold War. And and we were best friends for like 2 or 3 years and then lost track of each other for like 30 years and then reconnected recently. And I'm doing this band, Biptunia, with him. And long distance, but it's pretty cool. I talk to him a lot, so yeah.
Oh well, when we get started, we can talk about that because I've got a. You sent me an extra sticker, and I put it on the microwave in my truck. And a little cat on the front of it.
I don't remember sending you stickers, but I send a lot of people stickers.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Nothing personal, just you know. That's I run a cottage industry of I take donations for the Freedom Fiends and then spend them on free merch and give them away. Although, ask me once we get started recording how long I've been into Bitcoin and what my first experience with it was.
Oh, we'll definitely do that because it'll line up with like all this what to look out for in altcoin stuff because I'm sure people said, "Oh God, it's a scam" for the past 10 years. So
yeah, it's my title I should be introduced with is Bitcoin Jesus. I would try that one out.
Oh my God, dude, I've been getting so pissed off because people are calling Andreas Antonopoulos Bitcoin Jesus.
Ugh.
Have you seen that?
No, I try to avoid that guy. I mean, his book is solid, but other than that, I don't want anything to do with him. And like, well, let's just start. We can bash him on the show.
Yeah, we can do all this stuff. All right. Give me about 30 seconds. That way I get a good silent background. And I'll just jump right into it and say, hey, what's up, man? Michael Dean Fiend, the one and only Bitcoin Jesus, man. What's up?
What's the 30 seconds of silence? Is that for editing that we did that before?
That is for editing. Where I do this in an 18-wheeler, I get a lot of like idling, noisy, dirty, big trucks beside me. And I got to get a really good background and, you know, just squash that shit at the beginning.
And then you use that for sampling to use for noise reduction?
Yep. Or do it all in Audacity.
Or you paste it in as background over edits. Which one?
Yeah, or I put it in a soundboard and I call Jeremy and just play it really loud.
Yeah, and tell him bad audio is a hate crime. You know, I've been doing that. I'm really good at that 30 seconds of silence. Probably better than most people, huh? Like most people can't do it, or can they?
Oh yeah, you nailed it, man. But you're no rookie.
Well, because I've been doing 30 seconds of silence since 1997 when I first started doing digital film with somebody recording separate sound on an ADAT machine or on a DAT machine. How they used to do it, yeah. When I was your age, to make our digital films, we had to walk both ways through the fog in San Francisco, up and down Knob Hill. All right. Jeremy, you know what? You've seen our bad audio is a hate crime stickers, right?
Oh, yeah. And I know the how story? That came about, too. Jeremy. Yeah. Why don't you tell the listeners?
Oh, Jeremy is one of the Freedom Fiends, and he's actually the head fiend now. Like, he's helping me run the show. Him and Lou have tenure. Like, they could murder a baby on television. Aww. I'd have to still have
our boy has I'm become
kidding.
A man.
I'm kidding. But they'd be pretty hard to get fired because Lou's just been around forever, and he's like most improved fiend. He was horrible when he started, and he's great now. Wasn't horrible, just didn't know, you know, like 20 seconds of silence kind of stuff. And didn't, you know, buried the lead a lot. Really, there's only three things you have to do radio. It's be ready to catch, which is not a gay thing. It's when the other person says, so what do you think, Kyle? Like, have something to say. Whether, you know, like be constantly answering and commenting in your head, even though you don't say most of it. So you have something to say when the person throws to you. Don't bury the lead. Like, you know, when we talk about cryptocurrencies on radio, you know, you have to like work to your audience too. On radio, people don't even know what Bitcoin is. We start by explaining what Bitcoin is, and then we talk about Bitcoin, then we talk about altcoins. What's the other thing? It's better to cut people off a little bit than to have long periods of silence.
Yeah, well, I found you don't have to worry about that as much on a podcast. That's what I love about what I do.
You edit out with the spaces automatically?
Oh, yeah, truncate silence, man. It's an add-on in Audacity. Just boom, done.
Yep. I think it comes with it. Is it an add-on? I think it's one of the
it
effects
might be.
Built in. Yeah.
Yeah. I know to get the noise gate, I had to add it on.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, that's a lifesaver.
Yep. Are you running your truck right now? You should turn your truck off.
No, it's off.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, no, actually, this is something I recommend for people, too. If they're doing, like, let's say they're doing a podcast interview at a Liberty event where there's bands playing and stuff. Cars and trucks are like rolling recording studios if you turn the engine off. I mean, they're soundproofed and sound conditioned, which are two different things. But, yeah, so Jeremy. Oh, the other thing is... always come back to what you started. Like, doesn't matter if you talk for a half hour. If you start a story, finish it. Because otherwise, people have this sense of like, there's something I like that, but there was something wrong with it. There's actually a Rollins thing. Like, Rollins is an inveterate liberal, but I like his talking stuff. And and there's a talk. I used to listen to all his talking things, recordings. And there was one that I loved them all, but there's one I didn't like. For some reason. And I finally, three or four times listening to it, I figured out it was like, he started a story and never finished it. And that's what it was. So, so that guy, Jeremy, went at Pork Fest, back when people used to go to Pork Fest.
Oh, I've heard about this one.
He recorded something. I guess he was eating fungus or something. I don't know. I think it poisoned him. His brain wasn't working. He sent me this recording and said, hey, will you put this up on the Freedom Fiends? And I listened to it. It was like the worst audio ever. It was something I would never, ever, ever consider putting on the Fiends. Like, I mean, we don't, stuff doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be really listenable. And that's kind of a rule with audio. Like, I used to spend like 10 hours editing a podcast when I first started podcasting in 96. I'd go through and like cut out the silence manually and, you know, like change the volumes between this and that. No, like all that can be done with software. And it kind of makes it a little artificial sound. But also, it's just, you can't do a show 7 days a week, you know, for like, Fiends been going since 2011. If I were doing that every day, I would have quit by now. So you just set up the gear to get a good sound. You know, we sound better than a lot of podcasts sound good now because they read my directions on how to do a podcast. Did you read that stuff or you're just magic?
I just put it together and said, Jeremy, why does this sound like shit? He said, do this.
Oh, because Jeremy read it. So Jeremy read it, and then he told you. You got a second hand.
I knew Jeremy already went through Michael Dean.
Boot camp.
Super Fiends boot camp.
Torture. Well, he had to go through re-education camp at one point. So he sent me this thing, and it sounded horrible, and I just wrote back to him screaming, like all caps, like, how dare you send and I fired it, and it turned into like, we talked on the phone for like an hour and we're screaming at each other and I fired him. And before that, in the show, I was screaming at him and I said at one point, bad audio is a hate crime. And this guy, Jim Jesus, that used to be on the Freedom Fiends, thought that was really funny. And he made stickers. And now I also make stickers. And we both sell stickers that look really cool and say, bad audio is a hate crime. Like, people that aren't even in Liberty like those stickers. You know, like, I've seen bands that aren't political at all with that stuff on their amp just because people like it.
Yeah, I've got it on the front of my computer.
Yep. And then they Google it and they find the Freedom Fiends. So,
look at that.
So what do you want to know about shit coins? And, you know, it's funny you said I could cuss on the show and tell jokes. It's weird. It's hard for me to cuss. I mean, I fucking cuss like a fucking sailor in my life. But when there's a microphone in front of me, I don't, because we're on FCC controlled radio, which, you know, some people are like, yeah, you're not a real libertarian. But you know what? That's how you reach people who aren't libertarians yet and turn them into libertarians, is you go on. Like, we're on between, you know, the Rush Limbaugh show and I don't think Glenn Beck's on anymore, but Glenn Beck, you know, used to be after one of our stations. Like, we're teaching liberty to grandpas and stuff. So, like when I listen to a podcast and someone, especially if it's like someone that I do a podcast, like if I listen to Jeremy on your podcast and he says shit, like I'm grabbing in my mind, like I twitch. I'm looking for we have a cuss dump that's on the screen. Like on my computer, I can drop a cuss when we're doing the Fiends Live. You know, it connects to GCN to our network, and I'm looking for that when I hear Jeremy cuss, for instance, on your show or something. It's weird.
No, I had Lou on the show and he said, yeah, man, it feels weird.
Yeah.
But no, back to the reason I invited you on to talk about shit coins and altcoins. I'm doing this kind of like a mini series. I want to go through and hit individual coins in nice little episodes. And I figured we can kind of umbrella like good altcoins, bad altcoins that we call shit coins, and just kind of throw them into one show. And I thought, who better to bring on than someone who has experience.
Who's made a shit coin.
Their very own. Yeah.
That's kind of becoming an altcoin now.
Successful. Yeah.
Well, here, I got your title. I got your show title. Because I I just thought, like, if you're going to ask me what's the difference between a shitcoin and an altcoin, my answer would be a shitcoin is an altcoin that hasn't yet rallied.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess to go back, so the first altcoin, so the first cryptocurrency was Bitcoin, which is 2009. I got into Bitcoin in 2011. One thing I won't do is talk publicly about how much I hold of any coin. I should hold a lot more Bitcoin than I do, put it this way. But I've actually recently started really seriously investing in cryptos about a year ago. You know, I kind of went, man, I mean, I've probably spent 60 or 70 Bitcoin in my life, but it's when they were worth between $30 and $1,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's hard not to go with that. But recently I've started picking some coins and buying them and holding them and doing better. But I still have some Bitcoin from back in the day, too. But so Bitcoin was the first cryptocurrency. The first couple of years it was around, like, it was worthless. And then at some point, somebody bought a pizza with it, and they bought two pizzas for $10,000 or 10,000 Bitcoin. And then the first altcoin was Namecoin. Did you know that?
I've never heard of Namecoin.
Yeah, nobody has. That's the problem. So Namecoin and Satoshi Nakamoto actually helped create Namecoin in a way, because there was – back when Satoshi – for anyone that's lived in a cave with Osama bin Laden lately for the past 10 years. So Satoshi Nakamoto was the person or people who invented – the anonymous person or people who invented Bitcoin and released it publicly. But this person was accessible for a while. I mean, there's a post where he calls Dan Larimer, later of what's his shit coin? Steemit and BitShares. Yeah. Like, he called that guy an idiot at one point. Satoshi did. But Satoshi was active on originally on some security forums, like cryptography forums, which is where he released the source code of Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin wasn't pre-mined, but it was almost pre-mined because nobody was doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Only people who, like, had advanced degrees in mathematics knew about it the first 4 months or something. But it basically solved a problem that people have been trying to solve since computers existed, which is how to do a trustless database that anyone can write to without a central person. You know, so in the past, like, there were attempts at crypto type currencies. Like, there was something called e-gold, which was actually successful until the government shut it down. And it's referenced in the white paper of Bitcoin. It's something that helped create Bitcoin. Like, that existed. I mean, Satoshi referenced e-gold, BitTorrent. Mm-hmm. Actually, not in the white paper, I think, but in some posts. BitTorrent, the way it nodes together and there's no central point of fault.
Yeah.
And something called Hashcash, which was actually where the idea of proof of work mining came from. So he, you know, he's kind of standing on the shoulders of giants, combined all these things in a way that couldn't be shut down. Like, e-gold was a cool idea. It was like, okay, we're going to have this vault of gold somewhere, and we're going to have this digital currency, and people can buy shares in this gold that's in a vault, and they can cash it in at any point the way, you know, you theoretically used to be able to with dollar bills.
The way Peter Schiff drones on and on about today.
Yeah, Peter Schiff is an idiot. You know, if Peter Schiff had spent – he's, for people who don't know, he's a old-school libertarian economist who loves gold and hates cryptocurrencies, although he's kind of coming around on cryptocurrencies now. But the thing is, like, when he started bashing Bitcoin in about 2012, if he'd spent, you know, an ounce of his gold on Bitcoin, then he could now afford, a solid gold yacht to sink in.
He could buy the rest of Puerto Rico or wherever the hell he lives.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So at some point on this, you know, there's a few different kind of main forums people use for cryptocurrencies. One's called BitcoinTalk.org. It's the big one.
Yeah.
And then there's also cryptocurrency. What is the big thing with all the prices? I forget.
CoinMarketCap?
Yeah, CoinMarketCap, which Bitcoin is on.
Nice.
Yeah. So there's on Bitcoin Talk, Satoshi Nakamoto actually used to post on there, and all of his posts are archived on there. And at some point, somebody said, hey, why don't we figure out a way to do decentralized DNS on the Bitcoin blockchain? And Satoshi chimed in after two or three comments and said, that's a great idea, but I think that you should create a new network, but it could share CPU power with Bitcoin. So like, and that was when you needed CPU, when you could mine Bitcoin on CPUs, not, you didn't need special hardware. So in ASICs one, in basically shit. In one sentence, Satoshi invented altcoins and mixed mining and other people implemented it. But yeah, so it had some problems though. Like Namecoin was the first altcoin and it was actually the first coin to also do something other than what Bitcoin did, which was that it, you know, you're supposed to be able, you can register domain names, you know, .bit domain names on there, and you can associate them with an IP address, so you can have a web address that you can get to without going through the central controlled censorable database that the US government controls of all of
on
them.
The, ICANN, on the internet.
Yeah,
the
like the .com,
internet,
.web, .org, and even, you know, even European ones, all of them. Actually, I think the only one that's not in any way controlled by ICANN and can't be censored by it is the North Korean one. But I don't think you can easily or would want to buy a domain and have your website on there. So then if
I don't think there's a lot of marketability there.
Yeah, and you can change the IP address of it, you know, if your server gets shut down. So it was an idea for decentralized DNS, which is a brilliant idea, but they implemented a few things wrong. They made it a set amount of cryptocurrency, so it was so cheap at one point that people were like running a dictionary script through and registering like every word in the dictionary .bit. They were cyber squatting.
Oh god!
And then even stupider than that, they didn't make website placeholders for those, so like you could actually buy them if you wanted them. So they just like took them, didn't really think it through, thought they'd make a lot of money, but didn't make a way for people to buy them.
Yeah, just didn't get developed right.
Yeah, and they also didn't have a way for the average person who's not a computer scientist to view a website for a long time using that. And then they invented something called Free Speech Me, which I named, and I helped them develop it and beta test it and raise money for it, and I wrote all the tutorials for it. And then the guy I was dealing with there turned out to be kind of difficult to deal with, so I went and worked with Derek Slopey, who made Fiendphone, libertarian guy, good friend of mine, who made something called MeowBit, which was a lot better. And MeowBit still works, and Free Speech Me doesn't, because Free Speech Me was a plugin for Linux and Windows that worked on there's a plugin for Firefox. So it only worked on one browser, whereas MeowBit worked on, it only worked for Windows, but it worked on the whole computer. Like it worked on email, it worked on FTP, it worked on any browser. So, you know, basically if they'd figured out a way to solve the problem with domain squatting and then had released something with it to view the domains the day they did it, they would probably be the default way people view websites now. But, and they also were very interested in solving all the, like adding minutia details to it before they made it easy to use for someone else, which is a problem.
Before it's workable.
Which is a problem that computer scientists also have, almost always have. You know, they need like someone like me to tell them, no, you have to make it for Windows first, not Linux, you know. Actually, did you know that Bitcoin was first for Windows before any other operating systems? Because I think it's because Satoshi knew, I mean, it was CLI, command line only version, which has a little more of a learning scale than a GUI wallet, but you know, I think he had the vision of like, I want widespread adoption for this, so we'll make the Windows version first.
Yeah. So like Namecoin, you said they so like with Namecoin, they were doing domain names and internet hosting and all that kind of stuff. What else was in the early years? Because
Litecoin.
I think as far back as I can go, MadeSafe is the youngest one I remember.
Oh, that's so much newer.
Is it?
Yeah. And that really, I consider that a shitcoin because it really hasn't done what it's promised. It's incredibly overvalued because it's basically like a white paper and a beta that's unworkable. There's a lot of coins like that, and the first real altcoin, like the first coin that just kind of did nothing, I thought, which is what I consider an altcoin. I mean, all coins that aren't Bitcoin are altcoins,
right?
But the third altcoin, the third coin was Litecoin, and that's the first real altcoin. Like basically, it was just a clone with a few changes, a different method of mining. than Bitcoin. You know, it was based on Bitcoin, and Namecoin is based on Bitcoin too. But later, people got into things that weren't based on Bitcoin. Namesafe is what, like 3 or 4 years old? There were hundreds of coins before Madesafe came out.
Oh wow!
There were a couple hundred coins when Madesafe came out. Yeah. So.
Right on.
Yeah. What do you want to know, son?
So what were some of the ones that came out that people either lost their shirt on or maybe stuck around a while?
Dogecoin was early, and it's actually worth a lot of money now. Litecoin's worth a lot of money now. I don't know. It's weird because I don't really think that much about the value of a coin, the money, like
it's
the
more
monetary,
what they do.
What
right?
they do. Yeah. I've always been interested in coins that do something. Like BitShares was a disaster, but it's still worth a lot of money. And it was actually like the precursor to Steam and Steemit, you know, that whole like make money blogging, which is really make money writing shit, because anything where you're paid nickels and dimes and quarters and dollars to write, it's going to encourage link bait. Like the top, you know, I looked the other day at Steemit, like the top, at Medium, which is a similar thing. Like the top post on it was called "Where College is Free," which is total link bait for socialists, you know. I mean, there's some gems here and there. I mean, Jeremy's writing for Steam now, and he's like, I like this. It pays better than radio, which pays nothing. Well, I told him he should be using voice recognition software and putting his radio shows as text on Steam.
Transcribe it.
And see what happens. Because that's gotten pretty good. Voice recognition, I mean, I have a $60 Chromebook that can do that. You know, default built in using Google's computer. See, that's the problem, is everyone tried to do it using the resident computer, and you really need a supercomputer to do that. So they use Google's to do that. And it doesn't get every word right, but it's pretty darn close, and you don't really have to train it. I tried using like Dragon Dictate, and before that, like IBM had something for doing that in like 1997. And it was like, you know, it turned a sentence of like scientific dissertation into a poem. I mean, it didn't make much sense, and you had to train it. Let's see. What coins? Well, I like Bitcoin. Bitcoin, BIP. That's BIP with a P.
B-I-P, yeah.
B-I-P, capital B-I-P, capital C-O-I-N, camel case, Bitcoin, is this thing that I invented with a couple people about a year and a half ago. It's basically nothing more than a clone of Bitcoin with different branding and without the pre-mine that Bitcoin had. Bitcoin had like an 80% pre-mine, I think, secret pre-mine. We had like a 0.1% pre-mine, and we were open about it. And it was pretty much just to test the network before we made it public. And we, instead of doing a test net, we just made the thing and tested it. And then we gave all those coins away. Like I gave 50 coins away to all my friends for a while. And then taught a lot of people's first coin they mined was Bitcoin, because I wrote really detailed tutorials on mining. And it kind of started as a joke, but it's kind of worth money now. Like it was worth 2 cents for a long time. And then in the past 2 months, it went up to 30 cents. Today it's 15 cents, but all coins are down. I mean, Bitcoin's below 10,000. So yeah. It's kind of a real coin now, somehow.
Yeah, I think the way I heard it described was, hey, I come out with this thing that's not worth shit, really, but you can learn how to mine, and you can learn how to, you know, send and receive crypto and all this stuff, and it's not going to cost you a shitload of money, you won't lose.
I didn't say it's not worth anything. I said, you know, don't invest in it. And actually, there's someone that got mad at me recently because he asked me if he should invest a year and a half ago, and I said, nah, maybe mine some, learn how to do it, but I wouldn't spend money on it, which I tell everybody, because I don't want someone coming back and saying, I mortgaged my house for Bitcoin. You know, it's your fault, which is something only a socialist would say. You should be responsible for your own actions.
People are doing that now, man. They're like, oh yeah, my credit card interest rate's nowhere near the gains I'm going to make. And then 2 weeks later, we get the crash we got right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, the reason that coins went up a lot recently and then went down a bit was because a lot of noobs came into it. Like when I was, for the first 3 or 4 years I was into cryptocurrencies, pretty much the only people I knew who were into them were libertarians. I heard about them from Free Talk Live. Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus, actually heard about Bitcoin from Free Talk Live. Yeah. That's how long those guys have been into it. And we started talking about the Freedom Fiends in 2011, and we started taking donations in the Freedom Fiends in Bitcoin in 2011.
Yeah, I seen where Julian Assange posted the chart.
Oh, yeah.
And
thanks, government.
Thanks, government. Yeah. He's like, thanks, USA. You forced us to go this route and look at this explosion we've had.
Yeah, like PayPal. The government made PayPal and the credit card stop processing donations for for WikiLeaks in about 2011, 2012. So WikiLeaks started taking cryptocurrency, Bitcoin at the time. And, you know, so WikiLeaks has about 1,000 times as much money as they would have had if they just kept taking PayPal and credit cards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's the dictionary definition right there of unintended consequences.
And it's a beautiful thing sometimes.
Yep.
So you've got the experience making your own altcoin. You've had the experience of being in the game for quite a long time. What are some of the things that you see that you like in the direction that the whole crypto market's going? And what are some of the things you see that you think are harmful or could probably take someone a little naive and take the shirt off their back?
All right. Well, I'm going to tell you about my friend who got hacked for 84 Bitcoin. But first, I'm going to tell you two more things about Bitcoin. One is that I wouldn't say I necessarily made it as a joke. I wanted to make a cryptocurrency, and I wanted it to be solid. It's a crypto note, you know, like Monero. So it has untraceable transactions. It's a dark coin. But part of the reason I made it was a very specific joke, which was that I wanted, when I listened to Free Talk Live, I wanted them to have to say Bitcoin, not Bitcoin, or Bitcoin, not Bipcoin, which for a while they were doing. And Daryl Perry still gives the Bipcoin price on the top of hour on all Free Talk Live,
awesome.
I think on all LRN, because I paid him in Bipcoin to do that for like 5 years or something when it first came. You know, I gave him a lot. Like, now it's worth some money, Bitcoin. But, you know, it's kind of a joke then. Like, here's 50,000 Bitcoin. Just do this for the next few years. So it's like the price of gold, the price of silver, the price of Bitcoin, and then the price of Bitcoin. That's what he gives every day on the hour.
Nice.
So let's see. How to not lose your shirt. Well, if you don't know how to use a computer, you should buy gold instead. Gold doesn't go up like Bitcoin. And, you know, I will preface all of this with, I'm not giving marketing advice. I'm not giving tax advice. I'm not giving cryptocurrency advice. I'm not giving investing advice for legal reasons, but also moral reasons to protect idiots, which is what we're talking about here. So, you know, if you don't know, if you don't really know your way around a computer pretty well, I would recommend that you do something like gold or stocks instead, because it's really easy to lose your Bitcoin or your cryptocurrencies, because there's no one you can go to and get your password reset, like with a bank, you know, and gold you have in your hand. I would say first and foremost, own cryptocurrencies quietly. Like, I have some friends that are, you know, buying supercars and buying mansions and posting pictures of it. And I think that makes you a target for kidnappers, public and private. You know, I think that makes you a target for the IRS. I think it makes you a target for, like, your kids to get, you know, kidnapped, or your wife, or you.
For,
I think,
ransom.
And, you know, people say, I carry a gun, I'm fine. But, you know, that doesn't stop someone from, like, I don't know, putting DMSO and propofol on your door handle, so when you open your car, you immediately get in your car and pass out, and then they run up and kidnap you. Things like that.
Yeah. And
don't try this at home, kids. but... You know, I just think it's – I also think it's kind of crass. I think it's a young man's thing, like bragging about your hodlings. You know, it's proving your worth. Like, I'm 53. I've proven my worth. I don't have to do it. But it also makes you a target for hackers. And I have a friend that lost 83 or 84 Bitcoin from Coinbase. Now, the way – this is really serious here. This is really important. The way most hacks work today are not super duper, you know, Linux genius typing fast typing numbers on a screen like Mr. Robot. Most hacks these days are what's called social engineering. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, yeah. They build kind of a profile, and they catch their mark being sloppy.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff for that profile is on social media. I'd also recommend that on social media, you never put your phone number, you never put your home address, and you never put your real birthday. Now, of course, mine is all real, what I have on the internet, but you shouldn't. So, I mean, really, because, like, a lot of people think, oh, I'll hack someone's bank account. Hacking a bank account is pretty useless. You know, I mean, you can, if you can get into someone's bank account, you might be able to, you know, get them to send you, I don't know, try to transfer their money to somebody, to some other bank. Like, that stuff's so traceable, you'll go to prison if you do that. So hackers don't do that much anymore. They do steal, a lot of drug addicts, especially meth heads, steal identity. And people say, my identity is not worth stealing. I don't have any money. Your identity is still worth stealing, you know, because they can take risks with it that you wouldn't take, like getting one credit card, running it up, paying it back a little bit, getting another credit card and getting more credit and things like that. So, you know, even if you have bad credit, your identity is worth stealing. So don't put all that stuff out there. I'm actually, I actually have one of those credit alert agency things, and it's not the, God, I can't remember the name of it. It's not the one that it's not the big one that advertises on TV. It's the one that advertises on Dave Ramsey. And I don't listen to Dave Ramsey, but, people that are stupid should, for sure. I mean, I could host Dave Ramsey. Like, if he were sick someday, I could sit down and answer most of the questions like he does, because all he does is tell people, don't run up credit card debt, have a credit card, but have it for emergencies only, have the only debt you have, your utility bills and your mortgage, and buy a house and own things, and then and make more money than you spend and live thrifty. That's his whole show, man. It's his empire.
Yeah, pay the small shit off first. First and drive a clunker. That's his advice, man.
Yeah, yeah. But whatever the thing is that he advertises on there, I have, and it's great. It's like you get alerts. The difference between that and LifeLock, which is the big one, is LifeLock just alerts you. This company actually helps you if you, you know, they'll help solve it if something gets hacked. So, yeah, I'd like to recommend that thing I don't know the name of.
If you can remember it in the next day or so before I get this edited, I'll definitely write it down for the show notes.
Oh, I'm finding it right now. So the way that my friend lost his 84 Bitcoin is how, and I helped him figure it out. And this guy should have talked to me earlier. Like, he should have, you know, said, hey, I have, because he bought 84 Bitcoin when Bitcoin were like $500, like 4 years ago or less, like $300. He spent his life savings on it. This guy's like 25 and lives with his parents and works as a house painter full time. And he spent all the money he had on 84 Bitcoin when they were like $300 or $500 each. And his parents were like, this is the stupidest thing you could possibly do. And then when Bitcoin hit $1,000, his dad was like, wow, I guess I was wrong. You should cash that out, son. And he went to look at it and it was gone.
Oh, shit.
And it had been gone like 2 days earlier. So the way they did it, I helped him figure it all out, was they knew he had Bitcoin because he bragged about it on the internet. Problem number one.
Of course.
They knew his phone number and his date of birth was his date of birth and his phone number were on Facebook. So they called his phone provider, pretended to be him, probably talked to two or three different people. Like, so the first, you know, sometimes they'll say, oh, I can't help you. You need your recovery pin or whatever. But, you know, if you say like, I'm on vacation, I don't have that stuff with me, and my phone got stolen or fell in the ocean, you know, I bought a new phone, I need to port my number to it. So they bought a burner phone, ported his number to it, and also got into his Gmail account that way. You know, like he had two-factor authentication because it was Coinbase. But that's another thing too. Do not keep cryptocurrencies on an exchange. Buy on an exchange if you have to. I've actually never bought on an exchange with cash or a credit card. First of all, you can't in my state. I live in Wyoming and it's one of the three states that no one will do business with. Like, even with a VPN, like, you know, you can't get a credit card. You can't use a credit card with a Wyoming address to buy cryptocurrency anywhere. So everything I've gotten from donations, and then I've traded up for other things. Or for selling things. Like, I used to sell, well, still do. I sell buttons and stickers for Bitcoin and Ethereum and, you know, anything else anybody wants to use. But no one's donated any in a year. They send cash now because nobody wants to give up cryptocurrencies. But for, you know, 2011 through last year, before Bitcoin took off, people were, you know, buying things for me in, you know, like, here's a half Bitcoin. Send me some buttons and stickers, like that kind of stuff. You know, and unfortunately, I spent a lot of it. Not all of it, but I spent a lot of it on, or at least I'm going to say on here that I spent a lot of it. How's that?
Yeah, it works. I think we all regret spending as much as we have over the years.
Although, you know what? We're part of the reason it's worth so much, because we used it in commerce.
That's what made it valuable.
Which is, you know, that guy Andronopoulos, he basically said that and got $1 million in Bitcoin recently. I say that and get squat, so.
the false prophet, I guess you could
yeah,
say.
Yeah, the false Bitcoin Jesus. Roger Ver is the real Bitcoin Jesus. That guy, well, I will say this about Antonopoulos. If you want to learn to program cryptocurrencies, get his book. And then,
oh, he's smart.
Yeah. And then ignore him. That book is the best primer on getting into the deep technology of cryptocurrencies. Even if you're going to do some other cryptocurrency, start with that book.
I guess you can be smart and have a shitty vision and a shitty set of principles too.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. Well, a lot of people I know are like that. I have a list of them somewhere.
It's not that kind of list though, right?
No, I have an actual list. It's called celebritarians that are idiots or unethical that newbies should be told to avoid.
That's the working title.
I've posted it as that. Okay, so he somebody ported his phone to another phone. So basically, I'll tell you how you do this so you can avoid having it done to you. Do not do this. It's unethical and you'll probably go to jail. But there's so many people willing to do this that a lot of them do it without going to jail. So somebody bought a burner phone, probably at Walmart, or, you know, cheap $30 phone, Android phone, called up his phone provider, probably called both phone providers so they figured out who, you know, probably called a few of them until they figured out whose was his. And said, hey, I'm on vacation. I lost my phone in the ocean, you know, diving for starfish. I bought a new one. We need to port this. And they're like, well, what's your date of birth? Okay, date of birth. What's your place of birth? Which most people have on Facebook. Idiots putting that on Facebook.
Oh, God.
You know, they give their place of birth. What's your mother's maiden name is a common question. That's often on Facebook because people are friends with their mother and their mother's divorced and, you know, whatever. So information that's really easy to get. Then they usually say something like, what's your 4-digit reset pin that you got when you first set up your account? And the answer for the hacker is, I don't know, man, I'm on vacation. I don't have that. And they're like, sometimes they're like, well, you know, we're not going to let you do it till you get back. But they call back and do it with a few people until they get someone who's soft and stupid and will do that. So then suddenly the person has a phone in their hand that has this guy's phone number ringing to it. Then they use that to, they go to his Gmail and say, oh, I lost my Gmail address. You know, I forgot my password. And then they send the password to his Gmail or to his phone, you know.
SMS,
An SMS. And then he's got the guy's Gmail account. And then they go into, and then they change the password on the Gmail account. So he's not getting, and they send the alerts to like something else, to some other burner address. So then they go to Coinbase and they say, lost email, you know, lost password, and they send it to his phone, and then he has to confirm it with the Gmail account, and then they're in, and then they just probably transfer it to Shapeshift and buy Monero with it if they're smart, something untraceable. But that's how he got hacked. I mean, his phone got hacked and his Gmail got hacked and the password got changed. So don't do any of that. I'd also recommend that you have a different Gmail address or email address than you use mainly. Like, if people don't know your email address, they can't hack your email address easily, you know? Yeah. So have an email address that you just set up, you know, like Kyle23456931 or something that you only use for your two-factor authentication on Coinbase or wherever. And then I would also say don't have your private keys, you know, you should hold your own private keys. You should not have them somewhere else. You should have them in a wallet, a custodial wallet where you have the keys. And then I would recommend you have that on a computer that's not your main computer that you only use for cryptocurrencies. Now,
or a locked external hard drive is what I use.
Yeah, that'll work too. I actually have them in more than one place, but I have them encrypted. And I mean, I wouldn't even like make them on your main computer and then put them on an encrypted hard drive. Like having them on your main computer is problematic. Like my computer has 190 programs on it. And probably one of them is not secure, I'd be willing to bet. You know, even if there's not a hacker who put a backdoor on, like no one has physical access to my house. And I have cameras, so I'd know if they do the few times a month I leave. But, you know, even if somebody doesn't have a backdoor on my computer and I am using a VPN and I am using HTTPS everywhere, you know, probably one of the 190 programs I have might be compromised. So I don't do financial stuff on that computer, on my day-to-day computer. I have a Linux computer. Now, here's something that's really controversial. I'm going to say this, and a lot of people are going to argue with me, but I maintain this is true. I think it's safer to keep your all of your crypto information and do your crypto trading on a dedicated computer that's running Windows, that's updated regularly, that's running Windows 7, 8, or 10, than it is. I think that's safer to keep it on a dedicated Windows computer. It's never been used for anything else than it is to do your crypto on a Linux computer that's your day-to-day computer where you do everything, unless you're Mr. Robot, unless you're that smart. The dedicated computer and using an email address that's not your main email address, and using, I would even use a burner phone for the phone number. Yeah. So it's not your phone number that separate. People have. Yeah. Yeah. So I think doing that on a Windows computer is safer than doing it all on a Linux computer with your main phone number and your main email address. Now, safer than that is doing it on a dedicated computer that's Linux. But if you don't know how to use Linux, I really believe that using a dedicated computer that's Windows is better. Now, here's the problem and why I use Linux. Linux is obviously more secure, but it's not. I use Windows for my main everyday computer. I do all of the media I make on a Windows computer because it's what I'm used to, because they're cheap, because you can get, I don't know, a lot of reasons. But also because I don't know Linux that well. I know how to use Linux. I can do command line stuff for wallets, but I do most stuff on Linux GUI. Linux is almost as easy to use as Windows if you know how to set it up. And here's the reason I don't use Windows on that computer. One of the reasons, other than that it's more secure, is that Linux is free in that it doesn't cost money and in the sense of that it's ultimately extensible. But so I ordered for my cryptocurrency computer, I ordered a used, like, 8-year-old Windows laptop on eBay that had a fresh install of Windows on it. But I don't trust that because it came from somebody I don't know.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I wiped that with Derek's Boot and Nuke, which is a program that you can download free. Derek's Boot and Nuke. Mm-hmm. Wipe the hard drive completely. It takes like 8 hours. It overwrites it three times with zeros. It's Department of Defense compliant overwriting. Now people say, nice. Man, that's government. I don't like government. People that say that are idiots. Government has some things that work. One is the standards they have for encryption. Yeah. They actually invented the encryption that's used in Bitcoin. How's that? SHA-256 is invented by the NSA. The NSA cannot crack it, but they invented it.
Anything that they do to keep us from knowing what they do is probably worth a shit.
Yeah. And you know what else I like is the NATO alphabet. Bitcoin, Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. I use that on the radio
it's
all the time.
Ironic.
It's ironic, but it's I also use it because a lot of people listening to talk radio are vets, so they understand it. Or a lot of them are also ham radio operators, which are the other people that understand that. So I would get a dedicated computer. I wouldn't do stupid things. And, have a separate email address and phone number for it.
All that's perfect.
And if you already have it on a computer that's not secure and you want to move it over like that, don't move the private keys. Send it to a new address. Because if you're moving the private keys, they're still probably compromised if you made them on your main computer.
Right on. Yeah, that's all good stuff as far as keeping like your private keys safe and keeping your computer firmed up enough to avoid people phishing you and all that shit. How about next? Man, what are some like ICOs and brand new flashy coins that people are getting taken on, man? I know there's a lot of pump and dump out there.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot of ICOs that'll come out and look all flashy.
There's people that are like money marketing people that got into cryptocurrencies in the past 2 years that are companies that make ICOs to make money that never deliver. There's a bunch of them. There's also some scammy ones that actually do something. One that has a lot of promise that I would definitely not recommend, and it's a top 20 coin, is...
Don't say Tron.
No. IOTA, Internet of Things.
I've been back and forth on that one.
Have you ever had it? It's hard to...
No.
It's, I had some, and they did a... I decided to sell it, and they'd done a wallet update that I missed the memo on, and doing the wallet update to the next wallet update, it took me 6 hours, and I'm really smart with computer stuff. It took me six hours. Like, basically, you had to do things like, okay, install the new software, put in your old number, and then just keep trying until it works. Like, literally, that was part of the directions.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Like, they don't have their shit together. They also are totally scammy. Like, they jumped up in price one day because they announced that they were partnering with Microsoft. They did not partner with Microsoft. That was a lie.
No.
Like, that's not the kind of people you want to deal with. It's liars.
No, kind of like Tron, where they plagiarized a big portion of their friggin' white paper.
From what?
You're going to put me on the spot.
No, it's okay. Somebody actually plagiarized the Bitcoin white paper. I thought, or the Bitcoin website. I thought that was pretty funny. It was somebody it was a total shit coin. It was Cannabis Coin, XCI, which was a crypto note that was run by, like, fancy this, the pot coin was, like, run by people who didn't know what they were doing. But he actually, like, copied and pasted for his website this whole thing that I did that was kind of jokey about Bitcoin solves the pizza problem. The pizza problem is that coins aren't worth anything until they're spent for something. For example, Bitcoin with the pizza, blah, 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 link. But Bitcoin, from day one, we're taking Bitcoin in exchange for Freedom Feeds merchandise. And I said this about that, and then the guy did the same thing, but said it was like for, you know, a pot brownie from you have to get in person from a certain dispensary in San Francisco. Yeah.
So it's stuff like that. It's false marketing. It's plagiarizing other people's work to make it look like it's a legit coin. What else out there has been used to just really pump these things up, man?
Dash.
Yeah, well, you know, I said you could say fuck on this show. Please, God, don't say that word.
Well, ever. I have an idea to do something with Dash that would actually work really well. So I had an idea with Bitcoin to make it be usable for decentralized DNS, like, you know, the idea of Namecoin, but figured out a way to do the pricing right, or so I thought, which was basically to tie the value of registering a domain so it's always the same real world value by basically making it cost whatever $5 worth of gold cost the day you launch the coin. Make that the price of so basically, like, it was something like when I wrote this white paper for it, it was like, you know, 200 milligrams of gold would be the price of registering a domain, you know, and that would always be the price. And I thought I figured out a way to do this automatically where the coin would check, like, you still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I dropped my – I'm excited here with my ideas. Where the coin would check, like, 20 different websites for the price of gold and then average them. And Fluffy Pony from Monero, who's pretty much the smartest guy in crypto, told me that was not reliable. He said you can't rely – the wording he said was you can't rely on an outside oracle, and that's the computing term, to get your price. So what I thought of was to do what Dash does with masternodes, where, like, say this new coin would have like 100 – originally would have 100 masternodes where, like, people would put in money and get a masternode, and they would be running a masternode that would somehow get extra money for running the masternode. But part of the – to keep your masternode, part of what you'd have to do is once a week look up the price of gold and enter the price of gold into this into the network. And you know, if you had 100 people doing it, let's say, you know, 100 people once a week, like average, give or take, like 10 or so people a day would do that, and you would get the average price of gold, and it would be correct in there. And then you'd have to have a system somehow to punish people if they do it wrong. I think the way you do it would be, you know, if somebody more than three times entered a price that was, let's say, you know, 30% above or below what everyone else is doing. I think that could be done. So, you know, you wouldn't rely on a computer oracle. You'd rely on people doing it. And it wouldn't be fully decentralized it'd be distributed, not decentralized, which I think is good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I really do. And I think I think you'd want to base it on a crypto note coin, not a Bitcoin type coin or Namecoin type coin, because I think you'd want it to be untraceable transactions, because you'd want registrations untraceable. You know, you'd want to be able to hide who does it. And I think you'd probably want to make it so it would resolve Tor addresses from day one and make them human memorable. You know, where like freedomfiends.bip or whatever goes to, you know, a Tor address or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's my idea. Programmers, contact me at bipcoin@gmail.com. That's Bravo India Papa Coin@gmail.com. I got to take a short break here. I can get some water. Yeah. 2 minutes.
Go 1 minute. Go ahead, man. Yep. We'll probably wrap it up when you get back in the next right. like 15 minutes or so.
Worms.
And kind of close it out.
Yeah. When is this going to go on your show?
I don't have a set day, but it'll probably be in like a week or so.
Okay. So, all right. I'm rolling. Yeah.
So to kind of wrap everything up, man, there's a lot of stuff to watch out for. There's a lot of stuff to be wary of. And, you know, if there wasn't a lot of good altcoins and good stuff like Ethereum, if you've been a hodler, to just make a lot of money on, I mean, and use. I mean, there's actual good use cases for things like Ethereum and Litecoin and things like that.
Ethereum. Well, Litecoin is actually being used for commerce now a lot more than Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think Overstock.com uses Litecoin, right?
Yeah, because that's low fees.
Sure. Yeah. So with all that in mind, I mean, what do you think the future is from here?
Well, particular coins, people aren't going to like this, but I like Ripple. I mean, it's banker coin. It really is. But you know what? I don't believe this. Like, you must have integrity to buy coins. No, man. What you should do is make as much money as possible because money buys freedom. Money doesn't buy happiness, but money definitely buys freedom. Like,
it gives you some wiggle room.
It really does. Like, if you get arrested for something and can afford a good lawyer rather than do some like bullshit Mark Stevens, don't take a plea. You know, why are you thinking you have jurisdiction over me? My Black's Law book says, like, you're going to end up in prison with that shit. You know, living in a house in a decent neighborhood instead of living in an apartment full of thieves and drug addicts. And I mean, I have nothing against drugs. I'm just like, drug addicts, because of the government, tend to steal from you. Like, you know, you have more freedom living in a house with thick walls in a neighborhood that's not full of, you know, derelicts than you do living in an apartment next to a bunch of people who are derelicts. Like, for one thing, there's a book I'd recommend people get. This is kind of off topic, but it's really on topic because, you know, we use cryptocurrencies so we have more freedom. That's the reason, right? So if you want more freedom, I recommend two books. One is You and the Police by Boston Tea Party. It's a friend of mine from Wyoming who started the Free State Wyoming Project, who's really good on guns, really good on liberty, really has been like doing this stuff for like 20 years, 25 years. I mean, he wrote his first book about 20 years ago. This book is what inspired Cop Block. I mean, it's like, yeah. You can ask the guys at Cop Block. They've read it and they're doing what's in this book. But it has a lot of information that's not in this book. I moved to Wyoming because of this book. Like, my wife and I got guns in California in 2000, five. Someone tried to break in our house and we got guns. And then we realized like we couldn't have them anywhere except our house and the range, and we had to lock them in the car. Like, we were like, you know. I got this book about shotguns, and it said people who bought this also bought You and the Police. And I was like, a short book. Okay, I'll buy it. It's cheap. I read it in one sitting, and by the end of it, I was like, we're moving to Wyoming. Like, I learned that open carry existed from this book. You know, it said like, if you don't live in a state where open carry is legal, here's a way to carry a gun in your car. And he suggests like, you know, having it in a locked briefcase, like having it sitting in the passenger seat next to you in an open briefcase. And then if you're pulled over, like, shut it, as you know, and practice shutting it so they don't see you shutting it. And that, that a locked briefcase has more rights than a car not be searched. You know, things like that. But the thing that stood out to me there was the word open carry. I was like, what's this? You know, 2005, 2006, it wasn't common, and it wasn't a movement, and hardly anyone knew about it. And I read about this book, and I was like, honey, we're moving to Wyoming. But the other book is called Arrest Proof Yourself. I forget the author, but it's written by an ex-cop who's now a defense attorney. And there are libertarians who'd say, I'm not reading anything by a cop. Those people are fucking idiots. If you want to know how to avoid cops, read something written by a cop.
Yeah, they've never read Sun Tzu either.
Yeah. But I mean, so the basic premise of this book, it's there's a lot of minutiae and good stuff in it, but the basic premise of it is, if the cops don't know you exist, they can't arrest you, which is the complete opposite of Cop Block. Cop Block is, you know, often go out of the way. Like, that's why I would never send money to Kokesh, because he gets himself arrested intentionally, you know?
Recently, too.
Today, yeah, yesterday. Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, his dad is almost a billionaire, so why is he begging for money, you know? But, yeah, his dad owned a company called his dad owned a company that owned, like, majority stakes in, you know, Armalite, Smith & Wesson, and Colt.
Oh, those are names I know.
Yeah, like his dad. Oh, wow. His dad owned the company that owned them at one point. So anyway, stay out of the way of cops. And like the place you're most out of the way of cops is in your home. And mm-hmm. and if you're in your home, you're using VPNs, you're using encryption. You know, you're driving a car that doesn't have a lot of political license, you know, bumper stickers on it. And it's even if you don't have a lot of money for a decent car, at least it's registered and, you know, there's no taillights out and it's not smoking, you know. Like in my state, in Wyoming, you know, there's no like smog. You don't have to pass smog to have a car. Yeah. But if you have a car that's smoking, you're probably going to get pulled over just because the cop wants to see what else you're doing, you know?
Yeah. And to get back to your point, I mean, you have to be able to afford to do all this stuff. Like if you're in debt, like past your ears,
yeah,
you're not going to be able to afford to get yourself.
Oh, it's a spiral. It's
buffer.
A downward spiral. I mean, I remember Nima Vidati, who I started the Freedom Fiends with, who's doing okay now and actually self-employed, like doing DJing for weddings and, you know, has like a little stable of his own DJs that he makes a cut on booking at weddings. But he was really poor when the Freedom Fiend started. And I remember one time he was like, he got pulled over and he got a fix-it ticket for not having like the weird little skirt that goes on the bottom of your seat belt, like the little plastic cover on it, which is no safety feature in any way. And he actually had things that were unsafe that weren't a violation, is the irony. But, you know, he was really mad about it. Like, the government's making me do this thing and I'm having to take food off my table and I had to go to a blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't have problems like that, man. I mean, I'm not rich, but at least just since I started working for myself and got married, and my wife and I are together smarter with money than either of us were alone. But, yeah. You know, since about 2001, I haven't been starving. Before that, I was a starving artist and loved it. But, you know, like if I got a fix it ticket for something, I'd fix it that fucking day. And I just kind of grumble about it on the Freedom Fiends, but I wouldn't like, it wouldn't take food off my table. And it would, you know, like you need to have money to do that kind of things. And it's kind of ironic to me how many, I mean, Neem is doing great. I'm not picking on him as an example. I'm kind of picking on how he was when he was more of a kid. He's got his act together. But I can't believe how many libertarians, you know, anarcho-capitalists are so bad at capitalism. Like, they're all broke, man. A lot of them are broke.
I've said that more than once. The majority of the ANCAPs I meet aren't really good at the cap part.
Yep. But hey, at least they're not ANCOMing because they're broke. So that's good.
Yeah. Right on, man. Sounds great. Hey, I appreciate all the help, dude. Let's not say that. Hold on. How do we wrap it up?
Worms.
All right, man. Yeah, I get it. Crypto's a good way to make the money to give yourself that comfortable buffer. And we don't always have to seek to be rich and have Lambos on the moon or whatever the fuck they're talking about these days. There's a lot to be said about being comfortable and about being secure.
Yeah.
Secure in your debt and secure in, hey, I'm good enough. The cops might not fuck with me today. Mm-hmm. A lot to be said about that, man. And I appreciate you coming on. Why don't you tell everybody that doesn't follow you at the Freedom Fiends, where can they get a hold of you?
Freedom Fiends. That's Freedom and then Foxtrot Echo Echo November Sierra. That's how I started writing those out, because fiends sounds like fiends, but it's it's street speak for fiends. FreedomFiends.com. My music's at Bipcoin. I have so many Bip sites. I have Bipcot, Bipcoin, and Biptunia. BipTunia.com. I didn't mention this though. I'm no longer involved with Bipcoin. I sold it to a guy, and I don't know if he's doing much with it, but it's like running on inertia. I mean, he fixes it if there's a security issue, but he doesn't do much. It barely has a dev, and it's mm-hmm. doing better. You know why I think it's doing well? Because no one's hyping it.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, every coin, someone's like, has a vested interest in hyping it, and Bitcoin doesn't really have that, and I think people have gone,
it's natural growth, man.
Yeah, it's really natural growth. So, Bitcoin.org is the Bitcoin site. Bipcot.org is the Bipcot no government license.
Yep.
Which everything I do is put under. Is this show under that license?
This show is. At the very, very, very tail end of it, I've got Jerry James. You might know him. He did some voice work for the show.
Nice. Well, I will add that to the site right now when we're done. I will add that to the Bipcoin, the Bipcot site. We have a list of things that are covered by the Bipcot no government license.
Very cool, yeah.
Which allows use and reuse by anyone except governments or government agents. And there's no, you know, I've actually had people say like, well, that's not very enforceable. There's no teeth in that. It's actually far more enforceable than copyright, because copyright, to enforce it, to really enforce it, you have to take someone to court. Taking someone to court's difficult and expensive. To enforce the Bipcot license, if a government employee uses your thing, you just make fun of them on the internet. That's
just
easy to do.
Blast them. Yeah.
We actually got
it's fun.
Virgil Viduva and I actually got a cop to block us on Twitter because the cop did a review of Cell 411, which is covered by Bipcot. And, and I highly recommend Cell 411. It's a great, it's kind of, I think it does to like emergency services what Bitcoin did to money.
It does, yeah.
Except Cell 411 has no fees for using it.
That's awesome, man. Hey, I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on.
Yep. Thanks for your service, man. Worms. Bye.
Worms. Hey, don't hang up yet.
Yep. I'm here.
All right. Over